We're back at Money Life at the Morningstar Investment Conference. Joining me now, Michael Campagna, Senior Investment Analyst, co-founder at Morris Capital Management. If you want to learn more, it is morriscap.com. Morris, M-O-E-R-U-S, funds.com as well, if you want to learn about the Morningstar. Michael Campagna, thanks so much for stopping by during the Morningstar Investment Conference.
Thanks for having me, Chuck.
So, I didn't in the introduction say Morris Capital, deep value managers with a global bent, but you are deep value managers with a global bent. And we are living in a world that, you know, seems to be on the verge of a recession, not necessarily a hard landing, but certainly some problems. We are living through a time in which we've seen a normalization of markets in that fixed income now actually has income. It's not just fixed at next to nothing. And that's changing the investment picture. But what's it doing for deep value? Is this a good time, or do you need that recession to happen for this to be a good time as a deep value guy?
Well, I think, you know, as a global investor, we always have opportunities. So, you know, we live in some interesting times, to put it nicely. You know, as you noted, there's a lot going on. There's a chance of a recession here in the U.S., chance of a recession in many other places in the world. But with having the ability to invest opportunistically anywhere in the world gives us that latitude to find opportunities anywhere. And if you look at our portfolio today, you know, we're about 12% in the US. So I would say for a global manager, well underweight in the United States. And that's not because we dislike the US. It's not because, you know, it's not a good place to invest. Obviously, I'm an American, I'm from New York, but you know, the opportunities from a deep value perspective, especially, are outside of the US still today.
Now, you and I spoke at Morningstar last year, which was not quite a year ago. It was a little bit later in the calendar last year. Where were you last year? If we had been talking a year ago, how U.S.-centric were you then?
So we were still, I mean, we've been well underweight the U.S. probably for about the past 5 or 6 years. So if you look at our portfolio last year, we were probably about the same, about 10 to 15% max in the U.S. It's a little bit misleading because we do own some stuff in Canada, which is tied obviously to the U.S. economy, but you know, given valuations in the United States of America, and given the fact that, you know, last year when we talked about coming out of a 13-year growth-led rally, you know, it's not a fertile hunting ground for a deep value investor.
Well, and of course you can invest anywhere, but you also can keep powder dry. Mm-hmm. So where are you in the realm of fully invested? If you're finding the opportunities, are you finding them enough to be fully invested?
Yeah, this is a question we get a lot because we have the ability to hold cash, and you know, cash is a function of the opportunities we're finding at any one time. And I've been surprised. We are nearly fully invested, or as fully invested as historically we will get. So cash is, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10% typically for us when we're fully invested. Right now, you know, we're finding a lot of opportunities. We're finding a lot of opportunities in Latin America, some in Europe, some in Asia, a lot in Canada, in all of the unloved sectors of the world that, despite, you know, everybody focusing on one sector in one country, there's a lot out there that's really interesting to do.
Well, what are the unloved sectors that you love?
So, you know, one easy one is Latin America. Everybody hates Latin America from an investment perspective. It's obviously a lot of political risk, it's a lot of currency risk. You know, people honestly just don't really focus on it at all. It's a very small part of the global indices. We're finding a lot of interesting opportunities in Latin American companies that are fantastic companies that in many cases are just outright ignored by most global investors, or outright hated by many local investors. You know, given the political upheaval that we've seen in many of these countries.
Well, that being the case, would you be saying, since we're talking about how U.S.-centric you are or are not at this point, that functionally the issue holding these companies back that makes them the deep value buy that you want is simply where they're located?
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, one of the things we talked about last year was, I forget who said it, but one of the keynote speakers at Morningstar basically said, you don't need to own anything outside of the U.S. You can gain international exposure by just owning U.S. multinational companies. Well, I'd like to know how that's been doing over the past year. You know, it's been an interesting year for the markets, and a very challenging year for a lot of U.S. companies. And you know, we firmly believe that to gain access to really interesting local opportunities, you need to be investing on the ground. And I'm not talking about ADRs. In most cases, we're invested in the local shares listed in Colombia, listed in Chile, listed in Singapore, wherever we're investing. You have to be willing to go where others aren't to find those bargains.
And obviously in those countries, but are there specific businesses, industries or sectors? In other words, is it the tech sector, or it's the healthcare sector, or what have you? I mean, how, when you're looking in Chile or Colombia, are you basically saying, okay, I'm making a tech play there, or I'm making a banking play there? How does it, give us a relative comparison of those industries in those countries compared to those industries here?
Yeah, so each individual investment is always a bottom-up individual investment for us, but financial services is an area where we have a lot of investments, and that's a really interesting area to contrast the U.S. versus outside of the U.S. So in Latin America right now, we own Bancolombia, which is the largest bank in Colombia, and we own Itaú Corpbanca down in Chile, which is the third or fourth largest bank in Chile. Now, obviously, banking has been a very tumultuous industry here in the United States and continues to be. We saw First Republic's results just this week. But you compare that to what's going on in Latin America. In the case of Bancolombia, for example, 60 plus percent of their loans are floating rate loans and have been repricing with interest rates upwards, and 30% of their funding, meaning their deposits, are floating rate deposits. So 60% of their deposits are fixed, and 60% of their loans are floating. So as interest rates have risen over the past year, quite the opposite of what we've seen in the U.S., where that's been a detriment to a lot of banks, it's actually causing Bancolombia to have some of the best net interest margins that they've ever had. So being able to look outside of the United States, I think, is a real big opportunity for that people are overlooking.
That said, here we are at Morningstar. And although we don't really spend too much time talking about what Morningstar does at this conference, there are things, but that's not part of what we're doing on Money Line. Morningstar is known for fund analysis and fund rating and fund ranking. Mm-hmm. And a fund like yours drives them and other folks crazy.
Yes.
Because, as you said, you're 12% U.S. right now. You're in various places that my audience would have heard and said, oh, that's emerging markets. But you're not really an emerging markets fund. You're not really a... You are a go-anywhere fund that in the Morningstar world could be categorized one thing one minute, something else the next. How frustrating does that make it? I mean, you have to explain this to investors, et cetera. You have to be frustrated with Morningstar, but that also could mean that people are frustrated with you. How much do they need to understand what Morris does before they add you to their portfolio?
So look, at the root of it, I think it's an opportunity for us. It doesn't frustrate me. It probably frustrates our business development people, but from my perspective, it's not frustrating. Being miscategorized and being misunderstood is what creates a lot of opportunities from an investment perspective. And for our investors, I think it's very important that they understand what they're getting, because you bring up a very good point. We're a global fund, and we designed ourselves as a global fund so we could have the maximum opportunity set at any time. But being only 12% in the U.S., we would technically be qualified by Morningstar as an international fund. And Morningstar actually categorizes us as international small mid, not a global fund, even though we are a global fund. If the U.S. continues to go as it went last year, you may see us increasing our investments in the U.S. and getting above a 20% threshold, where we would then be considered an international fund again. So I think from our perspective, we're an opportunistic fund. We have 35 investments around the world, and wherever we're finding really interesting, idiosyncratic, non-market-dependent opportunities is where we're putting our money, and that tends to be in areas that are out of favor. And right now, the U.S. is not out of favor, even in spite of what we saw in 2022. And I think it is very helpful for investors to understand what they're getting with us and understand what we are and what we aren't.
Well, and let's bring that back, because in there you sort of got to where I was going. Yeah, if the U.S. continues to go where it does, we might buy more, which means you need the crappy market that we had to be equally crappy again in order for you to say, yes, we will expand. So just out of curiosity, since you held it out as a possibility, and I recognize you're a bottoms-up manager, mm-hmm. but is your expectation that, we've been through some tough times and those are continuing, and the rally we've seen this year is temporary, or is it, it's just a wait and see?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're bottom-up completely, but I think from our perspective, I still struggle to understand how the rally that we've seen this year has a solid foundation. We don't understand that. You look at what's driving that, and it's the fact that several banks have failed, and people are imputing that the Fed is going to stop raising interest rates or even start lowering interest rates, and therefore that's good for U.S. tech. I think that's at least the simplistic, or my simplistic understanding of it, and I don't think that that's a solid foundation to build an investment thesis on. So we're looking at the U.S. every single day. Are we seeing bargains today? No. Were we seeing bargains at the end of 2022? Not really. It's still, even with the performance that we saw, the U.S. market saw in 2022, I think there's still a lot of froth built into a lot of the valuations, and things have to go a little bit further for us to get really interested in the United States.
Well, Michael, I wish we could go a little bit further, but we've come to the end of our time. Thanks so much for taking time out during Morningstar Investment Conference to join me on MoneyLife.
Thanks for having me, Chuck. It's always a pleasure.
That's Michael Campagna, the Senior Investment Analyst at Morisk Capital. It's morriskcap.com, morriskfunds.com to learn about their funds, and on Twitter at Morisk Capital, which they just started. So you can be one of their first followers. I promise you that is where you're going. You can start a trend. And our trend, well, we've got much more money talk to go. So settle back and relax. I'll be right back with more from the Morningstar Investment Conference in Chicago right after this message.